Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland. Over the past few years, we have seen a dramatic rise in the number of people, some of them mothers with toddlers, many of them young teenagers on their own, trying to cross our southern border illegally from Central America. It is estimated that nearly 80,000 of them will be picked up by Border Patrol by about this time next year. President Obama has asked Congress for $3.7 billion to help process this wave of immigration. Republicans say they want to make sure the children are returned to their home countries as quickly as possible and are pushing for changes in immigration law to make that happen. Meanwhile, hundreds of migrants are being held in a detention facility in Artesia in southern New Mexico, waiting to either be deported or given a court date and released on bond. Joining us today to talk about this are Dr. William D. Stanley. He's the chair of the Political Science Department here at the University of New Mexico. He has researched and written extensively on Central American politics and the impact that civil war and other conflicts have on state security and institutions. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Rebecca Kitson is an Albuquerque attorney who specializes in immigration law. She also teaches courses on the subject at the UNM School of Law. Thank you.
Thank you.
Beatriz Villegas is the director of the Center for Refugee Settlement and Support at Catholic Charities. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Later in the show, we'll be joined by Senator Martin Heinrich on the phone. He recently toured the detention facility in Artesia and has been outspoken in Congress on this issue. Congressman Steve Pierce was invited. He could not make it, but he sent us some comments via email. Now, Dr. Stanley, let's start with you. Several people, including Winthrop Quigley in the Albuquerque Journal and the head of the U.S. Joint Forces in charge of Central America, John F. Kelly, general of the U.S. Southern Command, writing in the Army Times, have suggested that our country has been a major cause of this turmoil in our hemisphere. Is that true?
Yes, it is. It's probably too simple to say that, you know, the United States is responsible. It's a complex picture. A lot of the conditions that are pushing people to leave now are, to a large extent, the result of bad policies being carried out by governments in Central America itself. But if you look at it historically, I mean, this is a region where we've had a very heavy impact, where military interventions, political interventions of various kinds have heavily affected the political development, political stability, economic growth, et cetera. We supported a coup d'etat in 1954 in Guatemala that destabilized a democratically elected government and set that country on a path to military rule that lasted into the 1980s. And we fought a very intense counterinsurgency war against rebel forces in El Salvador throughout the 1980s, finally ending that war in 1992. That was headline news in the early 80s. It was a central focus of U.S. foreign policy. And less directly, we were involved in the counterinsurgency conflict in Guatemala. In other words, El Salvador, Guatemala, and then indirectly Honduras, the Northern Triangle countries that are the main countries sending migrants now, were all heavily involved in our conflict with the Soviet Union.
But this is all seems like a long time ago. Haven't they had time to, you know, rebuild and rectify these problems?
Well, not really. There are a number of secondary effects of the war that these countries have not recovered from. And frankly, the U.S. has had a long-term pattern of focusing on Central America when we perceive a security threat in the region. And then we tend to neglect the region in between. And since the end of the wars, we've really seen a period of neglect. I mean, the U.S. still has aid programs in Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, but they're pretty small. They're not very coherent. They do not carry a lot of political accountability that would really push those governments to govern better. And as a result, conditions, social fabric destroyed during the war has never really recovered. Moreover, there were effects of the war, such as the fact that large numbers of Salvadorans, Guatemalans in particular, came to the United States during those wars, many of whom were deported, some of whom had joined gangs in the U.S., that sort of planted the seeds of the explosion of gang organization and gang violence that is one of the dominant push factors now.
And by explain to us the push and pull factors briefly.
Well, push factors are considered to be things like a lack of economic opportunity in the home country, as well as immediate threat of death at the hands of gangs or organized criminals, and more generally, the sort of constant intimidation, extortion, pressures on young people to join gangs.
So
those are major push factors. The pull factors, of course, are the perceived opportunity to gain employment in the United States down the road, and for parents considering sending their kids, possibly the chance that their children would be able to gain status in the U.S.
That brings us to one of the central, you know, debates of this entire discussion, which is, are they being pushed out by violence or are they being pulled by economic opportunity? Beatrice, you have just come back from a week in El Paso working with Catholic Charities, talking to some of these mothers and children. What were you hearing in your conversations with them?
Well, first off, in the shelters, we're going to call them shelters. They don't want us to call them detained facilities right now.
Because they're not, in fact, high security situations.
No, they're kept very, the areas are kept confidential. Nobody knows exact addresses. You know, you really need to have access through agencies that are serving the children directly in order to find the facilities. But where we were at, it was mostly children. There were no mothers at all in El Paso. And what a lot of the kids were saying is they want to come to the U.S. because they're scared. I did not really hear any people or children saying they wanted to come here to work. All they really wanted to was to come to a place where they could feel safe and go to school. A lot of the kids mentioned, and again, these are kids between the ages of 5 to 17, very tiny little people that were there. They let me know that the Mara Salvatrucha, or MS-13, one of the most violent gangs that originated here in the United States and is now very, very, very involved in El Salvador, they actually go to the schools and try to recruit the kids. For boys, they're recruited to become gang members, and for the girls, they're recruited to become sex slaves. So if the kids, both male and female, say, no, we don't want to do this, what they'll do is they'll actually threaten their families and say, we will kill you and your family if you don't do as you are told to do.
So, I mean, you know, an 8-year-old kid probably isn't in the market for a job anyway.
No.
No. I mean, okay, let's. But, I mean, how many of these young kids are really aware of what that means?
You know, they're not. These kids have not heard about amnesty. They have not heard about the benefits that supposedly immigrants get here in this country. That's not even part of the conversation that we have with them.
Rebecca Kitson, on Tuesday, Senator Marco Rubio, Republican of Florida, told National Public Radio that 70% of these children are staying and being released into society and never reappear. You have handled many immigration cases. Is it true that people who are allowed to come through and have their cases processed through immigration court can effectively just disappear?
You know, it depends, I think, on whether or not people are being detained while they're going through the process. Obviously, under our current law, the way that it stands, children are required to be processed in such a way that they are released from detention in an expeditious manner, for obvious reasons. There is a particular rate where children do not where children or people who are in removal proceedings do not appear before their court proceedings. However, I think it's really too early to say, given the huge backlog in immigration courts, whether or not you know, these people that are currently coming to the United States are going to be appearing before the immigration system, given the enormous backlog in the immigration court system at this time. Most reports that we've seen through immigration courts on both coasts and across the country, for non-detained dockets, you're looking at you know, trial dates being set out into 2017 or 2018. So saying that someone is not going to show up for a court date in the future sounds more anticipatory than what's actually going on right now.
Because they will just be here living. Are they going to be allowed to work while they're waiting for that?
Typically, not right away. If somebody is applying for asylum, there are limits on your ability to work immediately. You have to go through an entire application process. There's a waiting period before you're allowed to be able to work. So the system already has some protections in place to allow people to just come here and immediately begin to work. And of course, even applying for asylum is an incredibly complex process. If you're applying for asylum in front of the immigration court, it's a defensive process, and there are many, many steps, many, many forms. And typically, most people in immigration proceedings are unrepresented. That includes children. There is a statutory right to counsel. However, there is no statutory right to unpaid counsel, as we see in the parallel criminal system.
So a 5-year-old has a right to hire a lawyer.
Exactly, at his own expense.
Right. Okay, hang on one second. We would like to hear from the audience today as well. Do you see this crisis as one of immigration or refuge? How much is our government responsible for destabilizing Central American countries and contributing to this exodus? Call us now at 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866 or toll-free 877-899-5866. You can also email callinshow@kunm.org, post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News. Dr. Stanley.
Well, I just wanted to add a point regarding the push versus pull factors in sort of judging which are most at work here. The poorest country in Central America is Nicaragua, and very few Nicaraguans are coming here. So that suggests to me that if the draw of jobs were the big factor, we would be seeing more Nicaraguans show up.
That's a very interesting point.
And in fact, what we're seeing is are the flows and the growth in the numbers coming from countries work in lockstep with the intensity of violence being experienced in those countries. Honduras, surprisingly enough, is now the most violent country in the world in terms of homicide rates per 100,000 people. Next is El Salvador, and third is Guatemala. And as the profile of which country is most violent has changed over time, the numbers showing up in the U.S. have changed in almost exact correspondence to that. So that suggests to me that the kind of gang intimidation and fear of violence that Beatriz described is the main push factor here, and that push factors predominate.
So, Beatriz, the children that you were seeing have already been seen and they are being allowed to stay while they await their court dates. Is that true?
Well, where they're staying at right now, it's still up in the air. The way it works out is they get picked up by Border Patrol, and then they get transferred into these shelters. And then from there, they wait anywhere from 1 day to 2 weeks to either be reunified with some sort of a sponsor, could be a family friend or a family that's already here. And then they can be transferred to any part of the country. Once they get to wherever they're meant to be at this point, then that's when they start waiting for the actual court date to come up. And that's where it also gets a little bit difficult because each state, runs the court differently with immigration. And the children are responsible for reporting where they go to. Again, that's a huge responsibility for a young child to take on, especially when they don't speak or manage our cultural norms here in the United States. So it's a long process. That's also a little bit unclear, and we're trying to work with other agencies to figure out how to ease that process.
Did they seem to you afraid to talk to grown-ups in uniforms?
Yes. We had to, I know that our staff, we try to be very kid-friendly, dressed in jeans, try not to portray that same uniform image that they saw with La Migra, as they called it, because they were terrified. If you asked them if they liked La Migra, they said no. They were all terrified of them. So we had to rephrase questions. Some of them didn't quite understand our Spanish either. We had a lot of kids that were from Guatemala that Spanish was their second language, and they did not speak it very well at all. So we really had to work with interpreters as well. So we had the language barrier issue. We had the trust barrier issue. But I think, you know, as time went by, they kind of started to realize that we weren't there to, you know, we let them know we're not here to report you to immigration. We're here to just get your story so that we can figure out how we can help you here.
We are going to take a quick break right now. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Gwyneth Doland, and we are talking about the surge of migrants, including women and children from Central America.
Support for KUNM provided by New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, a not-for-profit financial cooperative with member benefits for checking, credit cards, auto loans, and mortgages. Details on member benefits at nmefcu.org.
Next time on Peace Talks Radio, how a resourceful school clerk without a weapon, but instead with a load of compassion and empathy, helped talk a fully armed possible school shooter into surrendering to police.
It's going to be all right, sweetie. I just want you to know that I love you, though, okay? And I'm proud of you. That's a good thing that you've just given up, and don't worry about it. We all go through something in life.
That's next time on Peace Talks Radio, the series on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution.
Friday morning at 8 on 89.9 KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland, and we're talking about the dramatic increase in illegal immigration from Central America, what's been causing it, and what can be done to alleviate it. So Congressman Steve Pierce, who represents the southern part of the state, couldn't be with us today, but he recently went on a congressional trip to Central America, and he had some thoughts he wanted to share. He said Congress and the president need to work quickly to secure the border and stop the surge and address the long-term immigration issue. I think a lot of folks we're hearing from agree. He says this is a humanitarian and national security crisis at the border, but that it is those are federal issues. He says local and state governments should not get stuck with paying the bills for this federal crisis. He also said that although these countries have high crime rates, and he did walk through some of what he called the most desperately poor neighborhoods and spoke with folks living there, he said when the immigrants arrive in this country, they're asked many questions, and most of them tell us they are here to find jobs. Only a small minority of them claim they are fleeing violence. If they do, they are granted a hearing before a judge and given every opportunity to explain their situation. So, Rebecca, I want to go back to you and tell us more about this situation where how does it work? If I show up at the border and I say, I'm scared, I don't want to go back because, as Beatrice was telling us, the gangs came to my school and they threatened to, you know, kidnap me or kill my family. What happens then?
Well, it depends on whether or not the minor child isn't accompanied by an adult or not. If the child is what we call an unaccompanied minor, under the Trafficking Victims Protection Reauthorization Act of 2008, or the TVPRA, as we call it, there are additional protections that allow for processing of unaccompanied minors that require that the Border Patrol speak to the child. If it appears that the child is expressing fear, then there is an interview process that takes place. And within 72 hours, the child should be processed through Health and Human Services.
What does that interview sound like? What is it?
The interview, the CBP does the initial screening. There's not a formal process if the child is unaccompanied at that point in time. If the child is unaccompanied, the idea is that they should be taken out of custody as quickly as possible. If the child is accompanied by an adult, however, it's a much more expeditious process called expedited removal, where they are then placed in detention and there's something called a credible fear interview. That's what we're seeing right now in New Mexico in the detention facility in Artesia. Because that's a facility that particularly is serving minors with mothers at that facility. So the credible fear interview in that process is a series of questions to determine whether or not there is the legal building blocks of an asylum case existing in the person's story.
This seems like a little bit of a stressful situation for a kid.
Absolutely. You know, that's I think that that's part of the issue with the push towards more expeditious processing is you're really looking at Border Patrol officers being placed in the position of very quickly trying to assess traumatized children, whether or not, pardon me, there is a, you know, there is the legal basis for a very complex legal matter in front of an immigration court. And, you know,
and
a lot of times
that's not exactly what we hired them for, is it?
No, it's not. You know, and I think that especially with the increased push towards boots on the ground and the higher numbers of Border Patrol, the quicker that we've hired individuals, the less training that there has been for these types of complex matters.
Let's go to the phones and talk to Glenn from Jemez Springs. Hi, Glenn. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you so very, very much for this program. It's so needed. In 1986, I went to El Salvador during the time that the Reagan communism wars were going on. So many people don't know that we helped kill more people in that smallest of Central American countries than what we lost in Vietnam in our war, and that has ramifications for years, generations. You know, look at our Native America and how we mess things up that are still messed up hundreds of years later. The whole discussion, as I talk to people here and other places, I think people don't have information around the idea of being a refugee versus being an immigrant. And I think this needs to be put out there that Mexican immigrants are not the same as people coming from El Salvador, and in this case, children. Children are guaranteed by law, international law, by law that Michelle Bachmann and others in the Tea Party signed off on in 2008 to be able to be here and not quickly rushed and deported back as Mr. Pierce has been pushing for. And it was so good to hear on KUNM the coverage a day or two ago about Baptist leaders meeting and saying, we must have compassion for these children, not fear and misinformation. They need to be treated with all due respect. And I guess for people in Albuquerque and New Mexico, if you want to get involved in that compassion process, the New Mexico Faith Coalition for Immigrant Justice, my son happens to be director of that, please get involved. Rabbis and clergy and others were involved at Immaculate Conception Catholic Church.
And
a couple
we've got
of weeks ago.
Someone from Catholic Charities with us here today. Glenn, thank you so much for calling in.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Stanley.
Glenn, I appreciate your comments. And I'm reminded that back in the mid-1980s, in the middle of that bloodbath in El Salvador that you were describing, I went to a talk at Harvard by then-Senator Alan Simpson. And he made a very bold statement at that time that Salvadorans were the second largest immigrant group to the United States, had been for some time, and that they were all coming here for economic reasons. I went on to do a statistical study of that, looking at violence levels from month to month and the numbers of Salvadorans coming into the United States from month to month back in the 80s. And there was a very strong correlation between violence levels and the numbers coming and the variation in the numbers coming from month to month, basically demonstrating that these were people who were being pushed from their countries by violence rather than drawn to the United States by economic opportunity. And that's interesting
because we tend to have a lack of really good statistics about why they're coming. I mean, we interview them, but we're not seeing really good numbers about why they're coming, which is what makes it such a difficult debate. It's hard to get a yes or a no, a right or a wrong.
Right. Well, and ultimately, that has to be individually judged based on the individual case. Certainly, there were economic migrants from El Salvador to the U.S. during the 1980s. We know that, but there were also many cases where people had well-founded fears of violence. And the thing I want to say is that, you know, we've been here before. There was a surge of Central Americans coming to the United States in the 1980s, and there were tremendous political pressures then to summarily exclude or remove them. And We're seeing that again. That led to a whole series of measures to reduce the chances for Salvadorans to win asylum cases. The approval rate for asylum applicants was like 2% back in the 1980s. And the U.S. government was sued by a class action led by the American Baptist Churches for these practices. And the U.S. federal government lost that case and was forced to implement proper due process in accordance with our own laws and our own international treaty obligations. So we're there again. And I would not like to see us treat this as some kind of crisis that justifies removing due process.
Thank you, Dr. Stanley. Listeners, we would like to hear from you, so do call us now at 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866 or toll-free 877-899-5866. You can email callinshow at kunm.org, post to our Facebook page, KUNM Radio, or tweet at KUNM News. Beatrice, you work with Catholic Charities. How did the Catholic Church get involved with working with these folks who have crossed the border?
Well, we contacted an agency in El Paso, and when we contacted them first, we basically said, what can we do to help? And they took us, and they basically trained us to interview the children at these facilities. And the purpose of the interview is to identify any clues or any information that might make the child eligible for asylum, a U visa, the T visa, and the special immigrant juvenile status visa. Once we were trained, we actually went and interviewed them, talked to the children, and then reported all this information back to the legal services agency that we were supporting in El Paso.
And again, this isn't brand new work for you because Catholic Charities has had a refugee program for a while now. Do you know how long that's been around?
Roughly a little bit over 30 years.
Well, yeah, so not a new thing. Let's go to the phones and talk to Brenda in Albuquerque. Brenda, you're on the air. Do we have Brenda? We might have lost her. So let's go to Kate in Albuquerque. Do we have Kate? Hello, Kate. Are you on the air? Oh, sorry. We've left them on the phone a little while now. So Bill in Los Lunas, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, thank you for waiting. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you for having me. Here in this country, immediately we deport gang members back to their own country. These gang members that we deport are well-educated and knowledgeable about prison life in gangs, about gang life in the streets. And when they go home, as we deport them, they put on their blink. And when they walk the streets of their homeland, all blinked up, other kids see this, so they want to learn how he does it. And then they head to the border by the tens, by the 50, by hundreds to come to this country. Is that a good policy to deport these gang members?
That's a really good point. Thank you so much for calling in, Bill. Let's go to Mary in Los Lunas for a moment and see what she has to say about these kids. Mary?
Hi. Well, thank you for covering this. I don't see this as a crisis or something where we need to balance our country's needs against these kids. I welcome these kids. We have an aging population. These kids are tough enough to make it here, which is something I couldn't do. And they're ready to go to school, learn about democracy, and then contribute to our economy. I think we should treat it as money showing up on our doorstep.
Well, that's not the kind of comment we hear every day. Beatrice.
Thank you so much for that comment. It is a very difficult trip to come up here, and that's one of the things that I do want to mention is many of these kids ride what they call la bestia, which is the train. And so what these kids are doing is they're actually riding on top of trains all the way up to the U.S. border. Not the safest thing to do. There's many people that do end up dying from falling off either because, you know, things can happen while you're on this train. Some people do survive, and those that do survive end up with no legs, no arms, you know, their life gets changed completely. The other way that I did hear a lot of the kids that are coming here, and this is through the interviews that we held at El Paso, is through smugglers or coyotes. Not the safest trip either. Many of these kids, what's going on is they're paying, family members are raising a lot of money. We're talking about maybe $4,000 per child. They're getting transported up to Mexico. So from whatever country they're from to Mexico, that's trip one. The second trip would be from Guatemala up to the U.S. And we're talking about maybe 1,000 miles riding in cars and buses with some kind of a guide. Most of them refer to their coyote as a guide. And what the coyotes are doing is they're leaving them somewhere in the desert, and then they have to find their way to Border Patrol. So even that experience in itself has been very, very traumatic for kids because they're lost in the desert. They have no idea where they're going or who to talk to. And so, of course, when they see a Border Patrol official, it's tears of joy. Many of them were crying and happy that they found a human being that could help them.
And many on all sides of this debate are talking about compassion for these children and acknowledging the journey they have made. It's just, what do we do with them once they're here? That is the difference. And, you know, we are spending, I should mention, talking about spending billions of dollars to deal with this. So there is a legitimate concern there for how much this is costing us. Rebecca Kitson.
I think that, you know, the question of, you know, spending money and what we're willing to invest in when it comes to these children is an important one. However, you know, there's different ways to handle this. There's under the TVPRA Act, which was, you know, supported by a bipartisan Congress at the time, you know, we have decided to institute due process for these children because as Americans, we hold important that asylum, being able to grant asylum for those who do return to fear and persecution in their home countries is something that we hold dear as a country. And, you know, to be able to provide that due process, to be able to give them a chance to screen out, to make sure that we don't send children back to their death, I think is an American value. Spending the money on an, quote, expeditious process that would undermine that due process would mean putting more children in jail, putting more children behind bars, and spending the money on that instead of really making sure that we have the adequate court resources and the legal resources to be able to process these children and assure that we are honoring the values as a nation that we hold dear.
The Pew Research Center released the results of a poll that was taken earlier this month that showed the majority of Americans do want these children processed more quickly, even if it means that some of them who deserve asylum won't get it. You know, so that is the way we are thinking about this. Listeners, we do want to hear from you, so call in. Did you or someone in your family come to this country as a refugee? How much is too much to spend on due process for these kids? Call now. The number is 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. That's 277-5866 or toll free 877-899-5866. Dr. Stanley.
Well, I just wanted to agree with Mary, the caller Mary, regarding this not being a crisis in the sense that Yes, this is putting a heavy burden on the agencies that are dealing with these children who are arriving at our border. It's putting some stress on local communities, and it's going to be costly to adjudicate all these cases. But in the broader scheme of things, some tens of thousands of people showing up at our border in the context of some 11 million undocumented in the U.S. already is not a major national security crisis. We have some national security threats that we're facing. This is not one of them. And I think that if we could all cool the rhetoric down, I think that would be helpful.
So Governor Rick Perry has sent National Guard troops to the border. Do you think that was an overreaction?
Certainly, because this is not a U.S. law enforcement problem. This is a social problem. It's a humanitarian problem. And it, to a large extent, it's a law enforcement problem in Central America to the extent that the police forces, particularly in the Northern Triangle states, are not adequately protecting their own citizens.
But how do we know before we interview them that they are not criminals and gang members?
Well, you don't. That's why you have to interview them.
So,
and certainly there are probably, you know, there are probably a few gang members among the kids entering, and that's certainly a concern. But that's, again, something that requires individual attention, which costs money. And, you know, laws sometimes are inconvenient. Sometimes enforcing and carrying out laws correctly costs money. And I think we should just be prepared to do that.
We are going to take a quick break. This is the KUNM call-in show. I'm Gwyneth Dolan, and we are talking about the surge of migrants, including many children traveling alone from Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. Call us now at 277-5866 in Albuquerque or toll-free 877-899-5866.
Science, technology, engineering, and math students thrive at New Mexico Tech. With its small campus environment, rigorous curriculum, and professors who work closely with students to help them gain the experience they need, Tech graduates are ready to enter the workforce prepared to achieve outstanding professional success. New Mexico Tech, focused education in science and engineering. For details, visit nmt.edu. A message from the tax-exempt New Mexico Tech.
Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Dr. Larry Dawsey, author of The Power of Premonitions. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about how knowing the future can shape our lives.
Saturday mornings at 6 on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM call-in show. We've been talking about the Central American immigration crisis and what has prompted these children and families to make the journey to our southern border and what we should do now that they're here. In the studio today, we are joined by Dr. Bill Stanley, who is the chair of the Political Science Department at UNM, immigration attorney and legal expert Rebecca Kitson, and Beatrice Villegas of the Refugee Resettlement Program at Catholic Charities. Beatrice, a few weeks ago, there was a South Carolina mom who was arrested because she was working at McDonald's. She didn't have child care for her 9-year-old, and so she let her go play at the park alone for several days. You were just talking about some of the kids who have traveled all the way from Central America on trains. Are Americans thinking really differently about our own children and about kids who come from different countries?
Well, I mean, the difference is we're working here with families that are in very horrible situations. So what are you going to do when you are faced with your child potentially being murdered by strangers or people who are involved with gangs?
We don't trust a 9-year-old American kid to be in a park with other families and parents all day, but we will send a 9-year-old Guatemalan kid back to Guatemala alone.
Right. That's the issue there. It's definitely, I think, a little bit unfair, but it's not. Again, we need to revisit how we are treating the children and how they are being deported or how the immigration services can help them so that they aren't in that situation.
Let's go to the phones and take a call right now from Lawrence in Santa Fe. He's a former Peace Corps volunteer. Lawrence, welcome to the show.
Yes, this is Lawrence, and I was a Peace Corps volunteer from the years 73 through 78 in the Mayan highlands of Guatemala. My wife is a Mayan Indian from that highland area. We go in every 2 years, and visit the villages. Still a one-lane dirt road, first gear for the bus. These people that are coming in right now, these children, are economic immigrants. There are several from the big cities who are political and violence immigrants. But in general, we have a nephew who actually makes a business of sending minors from those countries up here. He's stationed in New York. He brings minors up. They have the story going around that if they're under 18 and they have somebody to accept them up here, they will be allowed to stay.
Right.
Now, they are charging and taking, putting liens on the properties of these farmers up there, charging anywhere between $4,000 and $6,000 per person, and they're guaranteeing them 3 tries to get across the border. He has, under his name, and he is illegal, 3 or 4 youngsters already that he has rescued from immigration. Most of these people are very willing to send their kids up. We basically had three situations. In the 60s and 70s, we had miracle seeds.
Lawrence, let me interrupt you for just one minute because I want to ask you about your nephew. Is it that he told you that most of the people he is working with have told him they're coming to find work and jobs and a better life?
Yes, yes.
And
right now I know two of those teenagers have $3.50 an hour jobs in a grocery store with Arabs in New York City.
Well, that is very interesting. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing that with us, Lawrence. We also have an email comment here from Chris Nyman Weller. He says, the elephant in the room is this discussion, in this discussion of U.S. policy, is the drug war. He says, U.S. policies supported gang control and political corruption, but legalization of drugs in the U.S. would make anti-corruption efforts more successful in Central America. Dr. Stanley, what do you think of that idea? Would legalizing drugs in this country change the situation significantly in Central America and reduce the immigration pressure?
I thought we had agreed you were only going to ask me easy questions. You know, the drug legalization debate is a very complex one. From a policy point of view, you know, it is attractive to think that if we legalized, it would remove these huge flows of money, which have had such a corrupting influence on governments, police forces, judiciaries, prosecutors, all layers of government in Central America. On the other hand, you know, there is a public health interest in not having people using very harmful substances. And, you know, when I talk to doctor friends of mine about this issue, they raise concerns about legalization from that point of view. But certainly, I think we need to look at ways to minimize the impact, the adverse impact that the drug war and the very huge quantities of money associated with that have had on governments in the region, because that underlies the lack of security that I think is driving people to come here.
On the phone with us right now, we have U.S. Senator Martin Heinrich, who recently toured the detention facility in Artesia and who has been one of the Democrats' lead voices on this issue. Welcome, Senator. Thank you for being with us.
No, it's great to be here. And while I just joined you, I couldn't agree more with the comment that recognizes that it really is violence and instability that is at the root of this crisis. And if we don't understand that and deal with that, then we're not going to effectively address what's going on right now.
Senator, a United Nations survey of unaccompanied child migrants found that 84% of them said they came to the U.S. to find economic opportunity or reunite with family. A smaller number said they were fleeing violence. Are these people refugees, or are they looking for a piece of the American dream?
I don't think that the two populations are completely mutually exclusive, but we're seeing from a number of analyses about 60% of these unaccompanied minors, in particular, the children who are crossing the border on their own, are fleeing violence and very unstable situations, who are not coming across the border strictly because of economic reasons. And obviously for, you know, a 7-year-old, an 8-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old to travel from someplace like El Progreso or San Pedro Sula, Honduras, all the way to the Rio Grande Valley takes some very extreme motivation that goes beyond just basic economics. And if we, you know, it's worth saying that if it were just economic conditions, we would be seeing refugees from Nicaragua as well. We would be seeing refugees from parts of Mexico where the economy is just as challenged. And we're not, and certainly not in the numbers that we're seeing from El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras. And those countries have become incredibly destabilized in recent years.
House Republicans released a plan to deal with the border crisis. And the cornerstone of it is that children and families must be deported as quickly as possible. We need to expedite this process. If we need to change laws to make that happen more quickly, that's what we need to do. even and Americans polled by the Pew Research Center say, a majority of them say that the legal process should be accelerated, even if it means that some children who are eligible for asylum get deported. Do you agree that we should speed up that process?
Well, first of all, I don't think if someone's eligible for asylum, then they should not be deported. That's a fundamental principle of American law that has stood for many, many decades. But I think there is a difference. I don't think it's accurate to say that the House Republican proposals just seek to speed up the process. They seek to short-circuit the process. And if we speed up the process in a way that really ignores the individual conditions of refugees, then we will be sending some children home, to their death, and that's not hyperbole. I think we can put more resources into the system, and for years we have needed more immigration judges. We've needed people to attorneys who can handle these cases, but just to turn people around and deport them without looking at their individual cases after a child has traveled 1,000 miles by themselves away from parents and relatives, that to me is not, it just isn't representative of the kind of country we want to be.
Senator Heinrich, Representative Pierce told us that he was concerned about the economic impact of this situation on local communities in New Mexico. And we've heard this from other New Mexicans, especially in the southern part of the state. They're asking, why are we spending money to feed and clothe tens of thousands of people who aren't even American citizens? We're still in a recession. We need to take care of our own first, and we can't afford this. What do you say to them?
You know, I certainly don't minimize the economic costs of this, and I think that the federal government needs to step up and bear those costs. I think that's why it's so important to move forward on the supplemental emergency spending bill that we're considering in the Senate right now. But we also have moral obligations, and we have always, as a country, met those obligations, and it has never been without controversy. Time and time again, we have seen, fairly ugly anti-immigration sentiment when times are tough, especially when the economy is tough. But I just returned from Jordan a few weeks ago. My colleagues have thought nothing of asking Jordan to shoulder a proportionate population that absolutely dwarfs what we're seeing from Central America in a much worse economy. And we expect that people coming from the war in Syria, the conditions in Iraq, that we can ask Jordan to just do that and ask countries in Western Europe as well to take those refugees on. We have a moral obligation here, and many of these children will be deported because many of them don't qualify for asylum. But we shouldn't weaken our asylum laws just to make it a quicker process to deport an 8-year-old. That seems to me to be incredibly misguided and not consistent with the kind of country that we seek to be.
You know, there are those on the other side of the aisle from you who are arguing right now that the United States needs to emphasize a merit-based system for immigration and just offer asylum to fewer people. They want to emphasize that we should be allowing immigrants who are educated, experienced, skilled, and English-speaking.
If anyone, Gwyneth, on the other side of the aisle was serious about immigration reform, we would have fixed or broken immigration reform a long time ago. We have had a dysfunctional immigration system for years. And my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, with the exception of some real leaders in the Senate, in the House in particular, have found every reason not to so much as mark up a single bill on immigration. I actually agree with something that Jeb Bush wrote recently, which is the best antidote to illegal immigration is a functioning system of legal immigration. And we have not had willing partners to do that. The Senate, in a very bipartisan bill, passed comprehensive immigration reform well over a year ago now, and we've seen absolutely no leadership on that front from our Republican colleagues in the House of Representatives.
Well, in that context, you guys are about to take a recess for the entire month of August. Do you think the Republican-led House and Democrat-controlled Senate will be able to come to some sort of agreement on this crisis before then?
I think we have to, and I think we have to make sure that the irony for some of my colleagues who want to strip out some of the funding that's going to be important to make sure that we meet this crisis humanely is that if we don't do a good job of funding Border Patrol, which has been under incredible pressure in the Rio Grande Valley, enormous amounts of overtime, real stresses, we're going to see Border Patrol pulls from other parts of the southwest border, and that means places in New Mexico and Arizona and California are going to have a less secure border because some of my colleagues don't want to take this crisis on. We also need to make sure that whatever we pass as a supplemental addresses some of the root causes, partners with these Central American countries to once again create some stability, recalibrates our foreign policy to recognize that Central America and our neighbors actually matter, and that we can partner together to reduce the influence of these gangs in Central America that have made it so incredibly dangerous that Honduras has the highest murder rate in the world. El Salvador is number 4. Guatemala is number 5. That is no place for a child to grow up.
Senator, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. Beatrice, we only have a few minutes left here, but I know that Catholic Charities has been deeply involved in this. Are there things that New Mexicans can do to help these folks while they're in the state? I know they may only be here a couple of days or even just a couple of weeks, but is there a way that folks can be involved?
Well, right now, the first thing to do, I would say respect each case and don't generalize and assume that all these kids are all doing one thing or that thing or whatnot. You know, really try to understand that these are different countries, the situations that everybody mentioned about. So try to keep an open mind about the kids that are coming. The other opportunity that people can have to help can help is with donations. At this point, I know Catholic Charities is receiving donations, and then we are putting them in towards those efforts. If they're interested, they can give us a call. Our number is 724-4670, and they can call that main number and get more information on how to do donations.
I know there are a lot of groups taking donations now. The Artesia Chamber of Commerce has done a lot of work in gathering supplies for those families. We'll put some of that information up on our website. I want to thank you all for joining us today on the KUNM Call-In Show. Thank you especially to our guests, Senator Martin Heinrich, Dr. Bill Stanley, Chair of the Political Science Department at UNM. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Immigration attorney, legal expert, and very soon to be mom, Rebecca Kitson, thank you for making time to be here with us today, and congratulations on your impending bundle of joy.
Thank you.
Beatrice Villegas with Catholic Charities, thank you so much for coming and joining us the day after you've returned from southern New Mexico.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
We have posted some links to the information we discussed today. You can check them out at KUNM.org. If you missed any of the program or you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted on our website, where you can also find audio from previous KUNM call-in shows. You can also email comments about this show to callinshow@KUNM.org. Find us on Facebook, where you can search for KUNM Radio, or follow the newsroom on Twitter at KUNM News. Thank you very much to Jefferson White, our very kind engineer today, to Kaveh Mohavit Movahead, I'm sorry, Kaveh, who screened our calls and did a great job, even though I bungled his name. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer, and I'm your host, Gwyneth Doland.